Ours was founded by a single incident. Several white families established themselves in what was then called Graysville. The entire town relied on Graysville Flint Bank, headed by a Mr. George Flint, who had already made hundreds of thousands of dollars in real estate somewhere in Maine, as rumors had it. He founded Graysville on a whim. With a sudden need for adventure, he packed up all he owned and sent for the rest once he made it across the Mississippi River and found himself in St. Louis, Missouri. Banking there became a hassle. Already established branches offered little to no room for a new executive and showed no interest in his cutthroat procedure of lending to those most in need, who also carried the smallest possibility of paying anything back, taking from them their very bed if debts weren't paid on time. Word of his arrival preceded him with the force of a plague, and the entire banking community refused to have anything to do with him. With no other choice, Mr. Flint headed just a few miles north of St. Louis, discovering a nothing place burdened by woods and orioles. He used his fortune to tear down every piece of nature that challenged his financial vision. He bought up the land and divided it into plots he sold to anyone able to pay between $130 and $200. Word got around in 1832 that a new development had started just north of St. Louis with cheap prices for large plots of land. Mr. Flint made a name for himself and his business, calling it the Oriole Street Realty Corporation. Between 1833 and 1834, more than 120 people moved into Graysville, bringing with them over three dozen businesses. In the summer of 1834, a dark-skinned woman and man appeared on the outskirts of town. They were watched from the moment they arrived to the moment they reached the newly built branch of the Graysville Flint Bank. It hadn't been open for a full 2 years before the two opened the door and the woman asked to speak with the superior of this bank. Everyone working stared at her. One man, so anxious, he sweated the pen from behind his ear till it slid to the floor, the clink across the wood making him jump. She cleared her throat and repeated her request. Someone stood and ran to the back. Moments later, Mr. Flint approached, a gun in his holster. People ducked beneath desks. Some of his bankers left the establishment to wait for shots to go off and for two bodies to be dragged out. He glared at the woman and then spoke to the towering broad man who came with her.
"Your business here," Mr. Flint said.
"I caught word that you have a few plots of land left for purchasing. I'm looking to buy one, build myself a home," the woman said. The man who accompanied her stood a couple of feet off to the side and behind her, meaning Mr. Flint had to turn around to see the woman he had briskly passed. He didn't like the height difference between the woman and man. She, of average height, but her head top reaching just under his chin. Mr. Flint stood about 3 inches shorter than the man, and the man's silence, paired with his daunting size and intense stare toward nothing, felt deliberately hostile.
"Is this man your husband?" Mr. Flint said. "If so, he should have told you that we do not sell to coloreds here. It's illegal. There is a sign out front. If he is not your husband, then he should have told you anyway."